You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Earth Station 1 with Mike and Mike. Howdy, sir.
Howdy.
How are you, my friend?
I am good. You know, I hear life is a cabaret.
There is times, but there's always something dark right around the corner at the same time. And I don't think it has, you know, the same meaning that you're thinking, though. That's part of the problem with it. And we got a really good show because we are going to be talking about Cabaret, the 1972 movie featuring Liza with a Z and Joel Grey. It's going to be really interesting to talk all about, and it's going to be a lot of interesting things because it's Darren's joining us for his LGBT segment, and he chose this movie for us to talk about. So should be kind of cool. And, you know, with everything that's going on in the world today and interesting stuff, it's neat to talk about something that touches on history, but is a musical aspect to it. Should be a lot of fun. We also have, you know, a great victim this week in the geek seat, and you know, we just got a full show for you this week. You know, Mike and I are both getting ready to head up to South Carolina later this week, and it's going to be great to see everyone at the SC Comic Con. And Robert puts on a great, great show, and we've got panels to talk about, but we'll talk all about that during the con report. We want to definitely hear from you guys, though. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. We got, you know, lots to talk about, but we also love hearing from you guys. It's part of the greatness of doing the show is getting feedback from you guys. You know, we get feedback up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. You know, people have been rating us up there. You can too, of course. You know, we'd love, that's a great way to tell that people are listening. And, you know, thank you for everyone who's been subscribing to the show and, you know, listening up on all the different platforms. It's always great. And a big shout out and thank you to all our patrons. You know, we definitely want to thank everybody who's been supporting the network and supporting ESO, you know, helping by donating some money each month. And you know, as we like to say, for as little as 25 cents, you can, you know, help support the network, support us here at ESO, at Earth Station 1, Earth Station Who, the Dragon Con Report, all the other shows that you do and, you know, we have on the network. And a special thank you to our patrons. We're giving you Earth Station 1, Earth Station Who, and the Dragon Con Report early before the rest of the general public. So it's pretty awesome that we're, you know, able to do that for you guys on Patreon. And so 48 hours before, as a little bit of a reward, you get to hear these shows earlier. Hopefully, you know, you guys are enjoying it and, you know, giving it us a listen. Let us know what you guys think, though. You know, we definitely want to hear. Do you guys like getting it sooner? And, you know, this is our way to say thank you for everything you guys have done to us. I can actually say now we are going to have the second episode of the ESO Network Riffs coming to you in 2 weeks. We are going to have the Wrath of Khan. That's pretty awesome. And we're going to be talking all about it. And it's available to everyone on all levels of our Patreon. So, you know, people, you know, for like we keep on saying, donate whatever you can handle and you could hear ESO Network Riffs. It's going to be coming to you now from now on monthly. So, and I can let you know that for April, we're going to be doing Game of Thrones to get ready for the final season. So Woo-hoo! It should be a lot of fun. So, you know, get your dragons ready, get your, you know, fire swords, all that kind of cool stuff. And just remember, winter is coming. Well, to some people in the country, winter's almost over. So
it's still going on.
Oh, yeah. We had snow flurries here in Georgia this morning.
I was gonna say, it was actually kind of cold here today.
Everyone was like panicking. I saw people lining up at the supermarket. Got to get milk, bread, and toilet paper. It's going to end. There's snow flurries. Ah. So you just have to worry about that. All right, let's get started with the show. We've got some rants and raves. And, you know, Mike, I've been thinking.
That's never a good sign.
It is kind of dangerous. I was listening to, like, some old music and stuff, and it was interesting. Judy and I were just playing around on YouTube the other day, and, you know, we were, like, looking at, you know, old videos from the 80s and stuff like that. And, you know, coming up in August, it's going to be the 38th anniversary of MTV. Can you believe that?
Wow.
And so I was like thinking about it, you know, growing up, you know, what kind of music influenced you? I know we've talked about, like, when we've done our music shows and stuff, you're very big into some of the Boston area bands. But what else, I'm just curious, like, growing up, what kind of music influenced you?
I was a freak.
Were you?
I was. I used to tell people when they asked me what kind of music I liked, when I was a little kid, like around, I don't know, 10, 12 or whatever, I used to tell people that I liked music without words.
Really? So like classical music or?
No, I mean, more like soundtracks. Like once I heard the Star Wars soundtrack, once I saw Star Wars and took that soundtrack home, like soundtracks were my thing. Like I collected them. I loved them. I listened to them all the time, whether it was John Williams or Jerry Goldsmith or John Barry. Loved all the James Bond soundtracks I could get my hands on. So I just listened to soundtracks. The only time when I was really, really young, I grew up with my mom, we had, you know, 45s that we played. So, my mom had a pretty good collection of Elvis 45s. So I played those a lot. One of my favorite songs was Rockahula Baby. No shock to a lot of people. But after Elvis, and then, you know, I kind of somehow, and I don't know how all of this happened, but somehow, the Elvis morphed into soundtracks, which then morphed into disco and R&B. I was really big. There was a radio station called Kiss 108 in Boston, and I listened to that all the time. And that's where I discovered Prince, who was one of my favorite artists. That's where I discovered. This is like Prince before 1999. This is Prince like around I Want to Be Your Lover. That was like one of the first Prince songs I heard and loved, that kind of thing. And Donna Summer, Diana Ross, like a lot of that stuff. I was just like Casey and the Sunshine Band, Cool and the Gang. Like I was into all of that. And so that was very strange. And then soundtracks are still a big thing. And then I listened, then I went through, pop music. Like I used to listen, me and my sister used to listen to Casey Kasem counting down Casey's Coast to Coast, right? Counting down the top 40.
Oh, sure. Of course.
So we used to listen to that. And, you know, I have to say that, I mean, I have no idea what the charts are like now. But I look back on it now, and man, those during the like late 70s and 80s, man, the types of music that you could hear in that span, I think it was like 2 or 3 hours, where there was 40 songs that you were listening to, because it was the top 40, and you'd listen to all these songs, and they were all so different. I mean, you'd get like a rock song or a ballad, or you'd get like a soft song. You'd get some disco, you get some R&B, you'd get some, like, it was just a weird sort of like introduction to like everything. So. And then, you know, I went through like alternative music when MTV started, like what you're talking about. When MTV started, then I got right on board with that, because I was definitely a guy who liked visuals. So then I started getting into bands like Duran Duran and obviously Prince, Hall & Oates, that kind of thing. Like strong videos were a good thing. We were pretty much on board with the MTV thing right when it started. I don't remember
being actually watching MTV when it first started.
I wasn't there like right that first day, but I think within the year that it was there, like we had it. So.
Okay. That makes sense. Cool. No, that's awesome. Cause we were like, it's like, I know for me when growing up, like we didn't get an MTV where we lived till like the mid 80s, the cable system that, you know, where I grew up just didn't want to get MTV. And, you know, they had country music television or stuff like that, but cause we were way outside of the main city but we didn't have MTV. So our source of videos was like Friday Night Videos.
Night Flight.
Or Night Flight, exactly, on USA. And it was interesting to see that kind of stuff, but it paled by comparison to what MTV had. And, you know, we had to go to my cousins up in New Jersey to see what MTV was because everyone was talking about it. And it was just like, we didn't want to even go out when we went to go visit them or anything. We just wanted to sit around and watch.
Sitting around watching MTV, yeah, watching all the videos.
Exactly.
Wubba, wubba, wubba.
Exactly, and you know, all the kids in the area were like calling the cable system. I want my MTV. You know, that whole thing.
So then I have to ask you because, you know, the age old question, you know, whether it's Betty and Veronica, whether it's Ginger or Marianne. So I have to ask you, in the MTV days, was it Martha Quinn or was it Nina Blackwood for you?
Oh, Martha Quinn, without a doubt.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Martha Quinn was one of my first crushes.
Gotcha. Probably. Yeah. She's very much girl next door. I don't even know what any of them do now. I think some of them are still in radio. But
yeah. I know a lot of them actually still do Sirius XM radio shows.
Yeah.
And so I know they're still around, but yeah, Martha Quinn was totally one of my first crushes and probably I've seen pictures of her recently. She's still very cute. And so, you know, I've always been like, you know, it was interesting because she was like one of like her and Sarah Jane Smith were probably my two first crushes that I can remember. And then, you know, slowly, you know, spreading my wings and seeing a lot of others. But yeah, but you know, Martha Quinn, definitely. Nina Blackwood just was never my type. And you know, she always looked like the hard rocker type thing, chick and everything.
I love Nina Blackwood's voice. You know,
she's got a,
like, to me, it was, yeah, she looked cool, but her voice was just like, oh, it just made me melt.
Oh, of course. And so that was the kind of the cool thing about it. And, you know, for me, it was like, you know, growing up, you know, my parents were big, you know, ex hippies and, you know, so they got us into all the different kind of music and we always had music playing growing up. And, you know, we had our radios, we had our AM radio to start with. And then growing up to, you know, finally get FM and, you know, albums and, you know, then cassettes and all that type of thing. And, you know, my parents used to hate it cause I always used to ruin their reel to reel tapes, you know, that type of stuff. And yeah, you know, it was always some neat stuff. And, you know, music was always in place with us. And, you know, that's why when you and I first met through a blog that I used to do, it was all 80s videos.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you were doing was it a blog or just on social media? Because you were doing a song of the day, right?
Right. I did Mike's 80s video of the day.
Yep.
And it was a blog that I did. And
meanwhile, on my blog, I was posting Friday night videos. Like I used the whole like GIF of the Friday Night Videos logo. And I would find various video clips on YouTube or wherever. Like it could be a trailer. It was usually a trailer, a music video of some kind, and whatever other video I thought might have been kind of cool at the time. So it was like 3 to 5 videos that I would post every Friday.
Well, exactly. And I did my 80s videos, and I did, you know, I went a year without repeating a band, repeating a video. I still have the list of all the videos that I did.
Wow.
And so we did daily a different 80s band. And of course we started it with the Buggles Video Killed the Radio Show. And it was pretty awesome doing that. And it was just a lot of fun to do, you know, the 80s videos and stuff. And it's just like a lot of nostalgia. And it finally, it started getting to be that I had to do research and stuff, you know, on different bands. So like, oh, wait a minute. No, that was 1979. Technically, I couldn't do that, you know, for certain ones.
See, I had no such limitations. I was just like, I like this song, post.
Oh, I know. There were tons of those too, you know, that I did. And I loved doing those. And, you know, oh, I love that song. Oh, wait, we did Styx. We did Mr. Roboto. We can't do, you know, Too Much Time on My Hands, or, you know, or Paradise, you know, Theater or whatever. And, you know, it was just like, and there were some of them that made me cringe, but I had to do it because I was doing a different video of the day. So, you know, and I'm actually playing with the idea of bringing it back and redoing it again.
That's a big commitment.
It is. But do it this time as a YouTube channel. So, you know, do something like that and, you know, tie it into something with ESO. But, you know, we'll see. You know, playing with ideas and trying to figure that type of thing out. So
all sorts of like legal stuff, though.
Oh, yeah. Of course there's legal stuff, and I don't want to pay royalties, so.
Right. Well, you'll pay. Don't think you won't pay.
Oh, I know. Trust me.
Yeah, it's dealing with all that. That's where it gets to be nonsense, you know? It's like, especially when you deal with music, so. That industry is really kind of like, no, I want that. I keep that, you know, like I need a nickel for that.
Exactly. We need a nickel every time somebody watches that. Yeah. It's like, yeah, no, please don't. So it'll be interesting. So we got, you know, it's been kind of fun, but music has just always been there for us. And, you know, we definitely love talking about and, you know, love listening to new stuff and everything. And that actually leads into our Geek Seat segment, where we have a musician joining us this week.
That's right. And holy crap, before we go to our music guest, I just wanted to point out. So I was just curious because you made me think about it. I looked it up and it was almost 10 years ago, 10 years ago to the month, because Friday, April 17th, 2009 is on when I posted the very first Friday night videos on my blog. So I am a child of the 80s, and one show I watched religiously was Friday Night Videos. So I'm bringing it back blog style. Every Friday, I'll post some videos of interest. They won't all be music. In fact, I'll use this space to spotlight a comic book trailer, movie trailer, or any other cool clip that tickles my fancy. So without further ado, and then I posted like some videos. So most of it is still up on my blog. So if you just do like hashtag or whatever Friday Night Videos, you'll get to see like all of them. And some of the links still work.
Exactly. So you just have to check it out.
That first one, I posted a clip of Davy Knowles with Backdoor Slam. Boy, he looks like he's like 10 there. And he probably is. And I also posted a link to Susan Boyle, because she was hot at the time.
I don't think Susan Boyle was ever a hot dude.
I meant she was a hot property.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, wait a minute.
Hey, to each their own. Like, look, I mean, hey, if you like that sort of thing, that's okay. I mean, you know, you can't knock the voice. That's for sure.
That is true. All right. Let's take a quick break, and we will be back in a moment with the Geek Seat.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. We've got a certain little superhero movie coming out in theaters this weekend. That's right, it's finally time for Captain Marvel. I don't know a lot about the plot on this one, but I've actually done that on purpose. I know with some of these movies, I can get super into trying to guess what the plot's going to be, finding out all the details about the story. But this one, I kind of wanted to just walk in and be surprised. So I'm really looking forward to checking it out in theaters this weekend. It's kind of interesting that it's set in the 1990s, so that will be something a little bit different. And of course, we're all curious to see how it will tie into Infinity War and if Captain Marvel will play a role in finally defeating Thanos. And it's also the first female-led superhero movie in the MCU, so that's a cool milestone. And that's actually pretty much it for wide release this week. No one really wants to take on a big MCU movie. I hear it's tracking for a pretty big debut weekend, so that will be cool to see. We do have a couple new stuff coming out on DVD that you might want to make note of. We have the movie Creed 2, which is, of course, the Rocky spinoff starring Michael B. Jordan. I have actually not seen the first one of this. I really need to. I've wanted to. It's one of those movies that's been on my perpetual to-be-watched list, so maybe this is a good time to make it a double feature. Finally, we've got The Favorite, which is a dark comedy period piece. You might have heard some Oscar buzz surrounding this one, and it's about two cousins competing to be court favorites of Queen Anne of Great Britain. It stars Olivia Colman, who of course won Best Actress at the Academy Awards, so that's pretty cool. And that's it for this week. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content, be sure to check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com. Coming up soon, we'll have a review of Captain Marvel.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
That is by far my favorite because it's also character driven and the stakes are high and there's much more of a mystery and intrigue to it.
A game like Wolfenstein, which people are saying are one of the most socially important video games of the past 10 years.
Catch our shows on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on over 30 more podcast outlets, including our friends right here at the ESO Network.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Earth Station 1. Now it's time for the Geek Seek segment, and this week we're being introduced to Trevin. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you very much.
Yes, welcome to the station. For those people who may not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, before I get into that, I'll say thank you for inviting me on the show. We haven't met before, but I've been working on the upcoming Tiki Zombie CD with Ricky from the Possum Kingdom Ramblers.
And everything I heard from that is so far is excellent. So.
Oh, well, thank you. I've just been on the mixing end, but we've got, I want to say, three songs kind of done. And we'll be tweaking some this week and starting another song called All of This, trying to get that one in the can.
So. And we're actually on a CD together.
Which one?
Because Ricky put out the Gentrine Records put out the promo. A few years ago, and there are some tracks from the first Tiki Zombie CD on there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
there's some tracks from Mantelpiece on there.
That's right. We're the closer. We're the last.
You close. Yeah. I'm the opening act.
Oh, there you go. The bookend.
So, So tell us a little bit about Mantelpiece and everything else you've got going on.
It's primarily a studio band. We've been based in Atlanta for a long time. And, I don't know. We have about, I don't know, six full-length albums and a bunch of other stuff scattered around, thanks to Gentrine Records and a couple singles. And it's myself and Kevin Little, Sandra Porter, and a bunch of other writers and musicians who are pretty much regulars. But primarily a studio band. And Kevin and I also play regular with a band called Nightwind Rhythm and Blues Band around Atlanta a good bit. So
very nice.
Yeah.
How would you describe Mantelpiece as far as the music?
Rather diverse.
You're crossing a lot of, you're checking a lot of boxes, let's put it that way.
Right. We like a lot of stuff, and having multiple writers, we tend to just kind of record and write what we want. The newest album is Tales Along the Flint River, and it's definitely got more Americana feel, and we kind of, you know, kind of, first time we were inspired by a place, so we tried to really adapt to the feel of the Flint River and the people around it and that kind of thing. So currently I would say we're Americana, but that's not always true. So.
Gotcha. That's very cool. That's very well put. Yeah. How long have you been playing music?
Forever. My mom was a music teacher and I had no choice. So.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, you were drafted.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. She was a marching band assistant director and a choral director and a music teacher. And so, yes.
Yeah, like as far as instrumentation or, mm-hmm. or was it singing, what kind of turned you on when it came to music early on?
Really just cause it was all around. I did both. I started playing cello in third grade, fourth grade trumpet. I always sang since I was probably in church choir since age five, you know, that kind of thing. So it was just always around. So, and mom did, piano lessons in the living room when I was little. So, you know, but if I didn't go out to a group, it came in. So, you know,
Was there an instrument or a song or anything that you did like early on that you connected with and said, "Oh yeah, I love doing this. I want to keep doing this."
Not really as a player, but as a fan, as a musician, as a listener of music, rather. I had my dad's sister, my aunt, her old 45s from the 50s, and really, to be honest, late 40s and 50s, and they were gifted to him. She was 10 years older than him, and somehow I got them at like age three. So I really just think it was just listening to that and eventually learning to play music was like, well, I could do that too. You know, and I think that happened young for me if I could do that too. And just started, you know, messing around and picking out stuff. So, but yeah, it was a weird beginning for me because you know, I knew a lot of songs that none of my friends did in elementary school because I was listening to Walk Like a Man at that point, you know, so.
Gotcha.
Yep.
That's, definitely not. It's the opposite of me, actually, because no music folks in the family at all.
Yeah.
And and to make it, and playing instruments was a challenge for me. So, So it's been a struggle my entire life. I appreciate music.
Yeah.
But, you know, performing and playing it is not an easy thing for me.
Well, most people I know have music thrust upon them by, you know, the idea of from a parent. So you didn't get that is what you're saying. So.
No, actually. It wasn't like you have to take piano lessons most of it was, I would have loved to. I mean, I think looking back on it now, I say that now, I don't know if I would have loved to back then if they had made me, but.
And everyone I know who doesn't play piano says that, you know, it says my parents didn't make me. I wish they had, you know how to play. And, yeah. You know, everyone I know who doesn't play piano said, I wish my parents would have forced me like every other kid I knew, you know.
It's kind of like the people who don't type right, you know, like they don't type with the actual, like, you know, style, like we're using like both hands and all that.
That's right. That's right.
It's like, I only, you know, use the two finger method because I never really learned how to do it the other way.
So. I use the right hand and then one finger on the other. So yeah, I can relate. Yep.
Very cool. Well, so how has your musical career progressed? I mean, did you start from an early age, like producing and playing your own music, your own music?
Yeah, fairly young. You know, middle school age. Had started a rock band, and I was also the main engineer as well. You know, producer and engineer, producer, and you know, but not necessarily a writer. I had other friends who I thought did a better job at that, and. And, you know, as people come and go and things change, it was kind of like, well, if I want to keep producing stuff and creating music, I'm going to have to step up and do my own. So truth is, though, Kevin, who's also in the band, and yes, it's Kevin and Trevin, both in Mantelpiece. And he really, when he jumped into it, more as a writer. His primary instrument is guitar, but he really was writing as he was learning to play. So it was... So I didn't always wasn't always in bands with him, but that's kind of why we started this studio project. Was just because he needed an outlet and I needed material to produce. So it's worked out well for many years.
I definitely have learned. Certainly, when we made this first CD, that really opened my eyes as far as the actual production behind you know, studio work, and it does seem to take a different sort of skills. Mixing, producing, being on the production side than it is on the performance side.
Very much. And I have a very good friend of mine that I grew up with who is one of the best live engineers I've ever met. And as much as, you know, I started mixing audio live, which then got me into, you know, buying equipment and doing it in the studio. But I've really geared my ear towards studio and I'm very envious of his ear for live. He's got a much better EQ ear and he can really narrow in to make every instrument sound just perfect. And in a live atmosphere, for someone to have that skill to make it sound like the record live, I don't have that skill, but yes, it is a different skill set than just playing or just writing. It's a different animal.
What would you say is, like, from a producing standpoint, some of the keys to being a good producer as far as putting together tracks? And
I mean, this may sound a little cliche-ish, but just being a music fan, one of the reasons I think we get away with the mantelpiece itself doing so many different styles is all of us are fans of different styles. So our ear, you know, kind of knows, you know, what a progressive rock song sounds like compared to a, you know, 50s pop tune, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's, we just kind of, I want to do the style thing, and someone will ultimately say, well, you need this kind of guitar sound. Oh, what do I need again? You know, that kind of thing. So it's really by ear, you know, who kind of has the ear for that particular style. But that skill helps.
Yeah. That's the other thing I learned is that, in addition to, you know, good talented skills that you would need to perform, like, certainly behind the scenes, you definitely need a good ear. And, I think when we were, like, I know for when we were producing the first, like I said, the first CD, it was crazy, especially, you know, listening to tracks back and, mm-hmm. and in particular, Bambi has an incredible ear as far as I'm concerned. And she was able to just isolate, like, oh, nope, that's off. Like, and yep, I'm like, yep. I don't hear what you're talking about at all.
Yep. And I like working with her because she finds, now, a lot of times her and I will hear the same things, but to be a more honest, she'll hear things I don't hear, you know, and I'm like, oh, missed that one, you know, and I'm glad to have her in the room. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. She is, like, she's phenomenal when it comes to, she's almost like, I think that's her mutant power.
Yeah. I would agree. That's right. Yeah.
In addition to the fact that she can play and sing really well too.
That's right. That's right.
So yeah, she's just, I just hate people who are talented. I hate them.
I understand. Yeah. Yeah. I play multiple instruments, but I'm not really that great on any. So I understand. Yeah. I'm always in super, which everybody's better than me, but I chose the path of more is better, which wasn't really true. It was the easier way to get by. So,
well, tell us about the newest album. What it's about, how long it's been, you know, in production, and what's the goal?
Well, being a studio group, we usually take our sweet time, and this time we didn't. It was about only 2 years ago. This is actually a weird story. It's just kind of funny how things begin artistically. I woke up at like 4:30 in the morning, and I don't know what woke me up, but whatever it was, I couldn't go back to sleep right away. So I looked on, you know, so I grabbed Facebook, as everyone does. They grab their phone and look around, and some article or something, I didn't know what it was. So I just copy pasted it in Wikipedia and looked it up. And at the time, I don't know if Wikipedia's app does this anymore, but if you looked something up on Wikipedia and then closed it and then came back to it 3 days later, it was still on what you last looked at. So I got in the habit of always kind of resetting, going back to the homepage, just out of habit every time. Cause, you know, I don't really need to know what your Mary Tyler Moore died, you know, next time I go to Wikipedia. Anyway, so when I went and reset this page back to zero or back to the beginning, it said places of interest near you, and it said the Flint River. And I'd lived in the same community, which is College Park, right at the, you know, tail end or the bottom end of Atlanta, right between the airport and Atlanta. And right about three blocks away from me is the headwaters, is the start of the Flint River. So I just started, you know, doing a little bit of research about it. And by 5:30 in the morning, I had a song idea and wrote it. And this was in like May of that year. And I kind of looked, well, when can I kind of travel this river and kind of check it out and just see, you know, because you hear about the Chattahoochee in Atlanta all the time.
Right.
The Flint is the second largest river in Georgia. So I had some time in August. So this was in May. And so months went by and had many summer jobs and had some time. And Kevin and I just started. I said, okay, these are the 3 days we're going to travel this river. And we did. And immediately found a lot of hidden gems down in Albany and Spurwell Bluff State Park. And we went the whole way down to the Florida line, and where actually the Chattahoochee and the Flint River meet at Lake Seminole. And then we just, you know, kind of got to that Florida line, turned around and came back up, because technically the water turns into a different name. So we thought, well, we'd done the Flint. But as Kevin at the time lived in South Carolina, and he was heading back, he said, I really want to write a whole lot more about this and this experience and the people and just the fact that this is an unpopular or not as accessible river But still, there's this awesome history. And again, it's kind of like comparative to the Chattahoochee where people use it a lot. There's a lot of good entry points. The Flint really isn't like that. So really, that just spawned this whole record. And to be honest, it's more like a double album. We put out The Tales Along the Flint River is the name of the record. And Finding the Flint is another album that's kind of a companion album to it. It's some instrumental songs as well as instrumental versions, and more expanded versions than are on the actual CD. So that's how it all began, and I guess that's how it all ended up. So it just came out this year, and both records. And the CD itself actually has songs from both of those on it. So there's a CD version and the two digital copies.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, and it's I was like, I don't even know where that is. I mean, of course I think of Flint, Michigan.
Sure, a lot of people do.
When I was and I was looking at it and I'm like, oh, so that's you're right. I had no idea that this existed.
Well, and I gotta say, with that, yeah, probably if you saw the album cover, you're probably like, oh wait, that's not it. that's one of the coolest stories. We're driving down 74, going, you know, it's a good nice state route and lots of pine trees and farms and everything. We get on this straightaway and I say, is that a mountain? Because, you know, I know of the North Georgia mountains. I've been there many times and in the creeks and in the water. And sure enough, I didn't realize that where we were headed was towards those mountains and the river flows right between it. And it's very picturesque, but it's in South Georgia. Who talks about the mountains of South Georgia? And I'm making this up, but I think there are three, you know, maybe five, but it was quite a sight to see. And that really was the fun part of the journey was the fact that we literally had Google Maps and a paper map, and that was it. And we were just going to stop at every bridge and every, you know, outpost we could find or whatever was along the way. But seeing those mountains and then falling in love with that particular area in Thomaston, right past, Woodbury was, I mean, I've been there tons of times with family and friends now, because just, you know, many people in Atlanta go to Lake Lanier when they want to jump in a natural,
they sure do,
cooling area. Yeah, and I go down south to the Flint. So,
wow,
yep.
Wow. Well, look at that. You be careful because you'll make it popular.
That's the danger. If I promote this record too much, that's the danger. Yep. Won't be just me and the dog, you know. So, yep.
Damn. Well, speaking of danger, it is time, Mike, for he is all strapped in.
Okay. He sounds too chipper. You know, you've been bringing me too many chipper people lately. You know, you have to bring fear to them. Let them know there's danger ahead.
I love the dichotomy. I love the dichotomy. They start off chipper, but then, you know.
Because this is the hot seat now. That's why
it's all sets in,
doom and gloom after from this point on.
Oh, you have no idea what's ahead of you, sir. Oh, rapids ahead, my friend.
That Flint theme. That's good. That's good.
I was listening. I wasn't just off surfing the web or something like that.
Okay.
While you were talking. No, I was paying attention. All right, sir. You ready for your first question in the geek seat?
Sure, sure.
What was your favorite geek out moment?
My favorite geek out moment. Can I have two?
For you, sure.
Okay. See the screws are getting tight here. Clearly one of my geekdom goes towards music, and I'm a big Pink Floyd fan, Rush fan, even bigger Yes fan. And, was the 1994 Pink Floyd show, probably the last Pink Floyd show, came through Atlanta at the Georgia Tech Stadium. I had 13th row tickets, and everyone was clearing out. The lights were turned on. The band is waving goodbye to everyone. And it's pretty obvious that David Gilmour is not leaving the stage. He's too busy waving, and people are, you know, handshaking, that kind of thing. But I wasn't up front. I was 13th row. And so the guy I went with, a friend of mine, we were actually the audio engineer I was talking about earlier, him and I are just standing there just kind of watching Dave and really not wanting to walk out with the crowd. Might as well let it filter out a little bit. And right as Dave turns to leave, I just jump up and scream and wave, "Hey, Dave." And he turns around and waves right at me. I was like, "Oh my God, David Gilmour just waved at me." So as much as that was a great geek out moment for me, a big fan, you know, as Pink Floyd, very much engineers as much as writers and musicians as well. About a year or two later, I kept it going at a Rush concert. Same scenario. Geddy Lee is going back and forth on the stage. I'm actually in a bad seat up in a corner. I just leap out of my chair, yell Getty, hand up, wave at him, and he waves right at me. And I'm like, oh, what a high. So very good geek out moments, but the story doesn't end there. Then at a Yes concert, front row, many moons later, Chris Squire is walking, almost marching straight towards me. I jump out of my chair. I give him a big wave, and he turns around and walks the other way. So two very great geek out moments and one epic fail. So I didn't get the trifecta. And now that Chris Squire is no longer with us, that moment is gone. So,
yeah, you know, you could have said, well, maybe that was the predictor right there or something like
that. I think it was a few years later. But anyway.
You know, I'm trying to look on the bright side, man.
Well, knowing that was probably only one album later. But anyway.
Oh, so, exactly. Yeah. You know.
But yeah, that was my favorite and most memorable, brush with fame. Right there, having the wave from David Gilmour and Geddy Lee. So,
what was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Most disappointing, I'd say, I can't remember what year, but it was at a Dragon Con where the Mythbusters, the build team of the Mythbusters were supposed to be there. So Carrie Byron, the lovely redhead, was supposed to be signing autographs. And after a good 2 hours of waiting and she never showed up, that was a very apparently she was on site and the guys were there, but I wasn't there to see the dudes. So that was my most disappointing. I was quite excited, waited. And a girl I went to high school with was there with her family. And so it actually was, even having someone that you knew to talk about, their geekdom about the show and about Carrie herself. And then, yeah, she didn't show. So she was apparently in Atlanta, but got hung up at some other interview or something. So yeah, that was very disappointing.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's always the suckiest part because the Dragon Con, so many different things are going on and, you know, you never know when people get canceled, people get stopped, you know, that type of thing.
Well, we were being teased, told she was, well, she's coming. She's here.
She's here. Yeah, she's here. Yeah. She's in Georgia. No.
That's right. That's right. So, I saw C-3PO and a couple other people, but, you know, that wasn't Carrie Byron. No. So
It's never Carrie Byron. Come on.
No, that's right.
I feel uber thankful now that I did manage to get her autograph.
Well, there you go. See, you don't remember it as a tragedy of life. Then.
Exactly. Like,
and it's funny because the opposite happened to me. I got her autograph and I think they were like, oh, do you want the other two guys too? And so she Tori and Grant signed it as well. And I have this picture of her with all three.
You know, hey, I got a picture with my son and Grant having a lightsaber battle that year.
Oh, you win.
That's cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was all spontaneous because it was over in the vendor room.
Yeah. I'm glad it worked out for guys named Mike.
So, exactly. Yeah. So. Well, it is our show. Come on. Hello. That's right. What geeks you out the most?
Well, like I said, music, but more specifically, I'm a big Mark Knopfler fan, Mike Nesmith fan, and Jeff Lynne of ELO fame.
Oh, yeah. Those are you going this year?
Oh, yeah. And I went to my sister got me the last time he performed in America here at the end of the last tour was on my birthday in Philly. So that was quite a treat.
I was at that show also.
Excellent. All right.
Dude.
I bought so much merch, convinced it was the last, and now he's coming to Atlanta. So, yeah,
it's fantastic. Exactly. It's like
– But how those bands and those artists geek me out the most is because they're writers, they're musicians and producers and idols. But I think how I geek out on them is every rare demo, every, you know, record box set that comes with that rare DVD, you know, I spend hundreds to satisfy that geek urge of their music. So way too many Monkees box sets because it has that one mic version that the others don't, you know, that kind of thing. So it's an issue.
Yep. No, totally understand that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
It just shows you have good taste too. So it's pretty.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That is pretty awesome, man. Okay. I'm going to geek off, you know, right alongside of you there.
Okay.
But let's find out what turns your geek off.
That I'd have to turn to the world of television. I'd say the thing, I don't know if it turns it off or it just makes me angry. That would be, I have a, let's see here, a hankering for, what's the word I'm looking for? I have a very great pool of desire to watch non-traditional cop kind of detective dramas, your iZombies, if you will, your Scooby-Doos, you know, I'm sure it comes from that way. As a kid, I like the non-traditional detective shows or mystery shows. And my biggest thing that turns my geek off would be when they retool them, and clearly from one season to the next, it's not the same show anymore. It just has the same characters. It's like, what company bought this and retweaked it? Mm-hmm. So,
they do that way too often.
Oh yeah. What comes to mind, not only I said iZombie, but also Dark Angel. I loved Dark Angel. A girlfriend of mine and I, it was one of the only shows we totally loved together. And by second season, it was so retooled. We were like, we have to stop. So, and you know, that was sad. So.
No, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
No, that is cool. That is really cool that you have that kind of, you know, thing, but it's so disappointed. Like, you're like, I'm ready for the next season. It's like, who is the show?
That's right.
You know?
Well, do you happen to remember the show John Doe? It only had one season.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And it ended with the best twist cliffhanger ever, and then it was erased from existence. So that was it.
There was also a show called Nowhere Man. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
Oh, love that.
Yeah. And it was awesome, and it only lasted one season.
Yeah.
Bruce Boxleitner was it, I think.
I can't remember his name. Yeah. I just remember the show was so awesome.
No, it was oh man, it's going to kill me because I know who that is, because he was in Star Trek. He's been in everything.
Yeah.
Now I can't think of his
name. He was Captain Pike.
Yep.
Yep.
He
also voices a very good Batman too.
Yes. So yeah, because that also had the greatest twist at the end. And all right, bring back next season.
Sorry. That's right.
Sorry, not coming back. It's like, no.
I remember it was a good halfway through the series. You figure out that the girlfriend has the same time traveling ability, and you're like, oh, this is going to be a team effort. This is great, and then it ends.
You know, exactly. So. Damn them. Yep.
That's right.
Okay. What fictional character would you like to meet?
I'd say Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Which version?
The man, the real man,
the
character that grew from, you know, the Padawan to the master. Jedis in general, the biggest appeal to me is their confidence. That, you know, the fact that they, you can open up any scene, they're in the worst possible danger, they have all this cockiness, this confidence about them, because they know, hey, this is just another day at work. I'm going to get out of this. And to me, Obi-Wan does it the best. So that'd be cool to have. It wouldn't be a conversation. It'd be more like, can I sign up for your class?
Will you train me, Master Obi-Wan?
There it is. Exactly. Yeah. At least a weekend session of how to know you're going to come out of every room on top, you know, that kind of thing. So.
Well, exactly. But, you know, his last two just didn't work out too well for you, you know?
Yeah.
By the way, since I had to look it up, since it was bugging me, and I know listeners at home are going yelling at us, it's Bruce Greenwood.
Bruce Greenwood, that's right.
Greenwood, that's it.
That's right. Okay, thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thank you.
What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Sticking with the Star Wars fame, I'd go with the whiny Anakin from the films. but I'd have to, you know, counteract that with, Clone Wars Anakin. You know, quite a badass. Again, the confidence, man. That's what it is. So I wouldn't care to meet whiny Anakin from 1, 2, and 3, or really 2 and 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I can understand that. You can't take it out on a kid, you know. Like,
No.
You can, but you got a lot of bad looks.
Well, as much as, you know, a lot of people are really, and I hope to not get any negative press here over, a lot of people love the Luke Skywalker story. I like the Anakin story, but I don't like the whiny episodes. So I like the character development of Anakin from beginning to end, and including Darth, in case some people see Darth as separate. I include that part too, you know. But yeah, but whiny Anakin, that's okay. I don't need to beat him.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, or quote?
I live by a geek phrase. I don't know if the world knows where this comes from, but I imagine half the world does. When you do things right, people won't be sure you've done anything at all. From Futurama. it's the episode Godfellows, where Bender meets God. And he's trying to, Fry is looking for the existence of God. Bender meets God. And in the end, is God real? And God says, laughs because Bender does something right. And he says, well, when you do things right, people won't be sure you've done anything at all. So I live by that geek line.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I'm a behind the scenes guy. So it, you know, as far as what I do behind the scenes, it applies to that aspect of life as well. It's just good words to live by. So,
oh yeah.
And it's said by God, well, the character of God anyway. So.
Touche. Good point there.
Yeah. 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 So.
What is your ideal geek occupation?
Going back to the Jeff Lynn, he has a guy, and I don't know the guy's name. I'm not as big of a geek as I should be, I guess. Yeah, I know. There's a guy who, at one point in Jeff Lynn's career, was hired to come to his home 6 days a week and record for him. He was his engineer. And I thought, that's a job? When I learned of this, I was like, well, that's what I want to do every day. And, you know, I'd be disappointed about, you know, having the seventh day off. But yeah, so just to hear all those rare demos instead of having to buy them or track them down or get a really crappy download. Yeah, I'd rather just be his direct engineer. That'd be great.
That is awesome.
Yep.
What geek occupation would you not like to do though?
Oh, well, I can't think of it. I mean, I like all forms of entertainment pretty much. I think a stormtrooper who works in sanitation would be the worst geek job to do, if that counts.
Sure. So,
yeah.
Nope, that's a good one.
Okay.
That is a really good one.
All right.
All right. Are you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
I hope so.
Okay. Remember, this is for all the marbles.
Okay.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Oh, this one's a real one, unlike my sanitation comment. I'd love to run a record store. So, but well, a little bit more to that. I'd have to have a studio upstairs and probably live on the level above that. So, but no, a record store would be great, especially possibly along the Flint River, you know, maybe where there isn't a record store and people feel there should be. And I don't know, focus on the music of Capricorn Records or something like that if I'm down south, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, I'd love to run a record shop, but also have the recording studio upstairs. So something like that.
That would be cool. That would be really cool. Yep. Well, I got some news for you, sir. You've made it through the geek seat. Congratulations.
Oh, that was it. All right, good.
Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $68.08.
All right. I was think there'd be a box set involved, but that will do just fine.
Well, there is Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
That's a box.
There you go. Yep.
Well, very cool. Well, Jordan, it's been great talking to you and getting to know you a little bit. So where can people find your music? Where can they check you out? Do you play live or what's going on with you?
Kevin and I do some live stuff with Nightwind Rhythm and Blues Band. Do some blues festivals and just stuff around Atlanta. But the main place where we always are is, of course, at Mantelpiece Band on Facebook and Spotify. If Mantelpiece doesn't get you there, look Mantelpiece Band, and that usually finds us on all social media sites and downloadables and listening and all that good stuff, streaming.
Well, we will definitely have a link to it in the show notes as well.
So thank you so much.
And good luck with the album.
Yeah, thank you. It's doing well, and a lot of people like it. They say it's our best work, which makes the next one even harder to live up to. So thank you. Yeah. Should be fun.
And again, let me also publicly say thank you so much for all the work that you're doing on the new Tiki Zombie album. It sounds really good.
Sure.
I can't wait for other people to hear it.
I appreciate that. No, it's been a lot of fun too. It's fun to work on other people's stuff because, you know, then, you know, I get to be critical about how other people play, not me. So yeah. So thank you for letting me, you know, be judgmental of others. I appreciate that.
Wow.
Yeah. It's all good stuff. But I get to fix it and make him sound even better. That's
going to be fun watching him produce from the geek seat because, you know, he's stuck there for a while.
That's right.
So, all right, man, let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment. We're going to be talking all about Cabaret.
You made a fool of me. But the broken dreams have got to end.
Did
you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but now you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network, Patreon's easy. All you have to do is click on the link on the top navigation of the ESO Network website or go to patreon.com/ESO Network. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
This was Germany in the early 30s.
Hello, stranger.
Full of life and love.
Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, Ladies und Gents, Fräulein Sally Bowles.
This was Sally Bowles in the early 30s.
Oh, well, I dash all day, and I work late at the cabaret.
Full of life.
I love parties. Doesn't my body drive you wild with desire?
And love.
Oh, right.
A special girl.
I'm going to be a great film star. That is, if booze and sex don't get me first.
On the brink of something fantastic.
I mean, it would be funny, wouldn't it, if he asked me to become the next Baroness von Hoyne in Regensburg?
And frightening.
I'm Sally Bowles.
I'm Brian Roberts.
And I have this strange, mystical, daddish feeling about you. So you're moving right in, okay? Okay? Have you ever slept with a dwarf?
Once, but it wasn't a lasting relationship.
Do you sleep with girls or don't you?
Sally, you don't ask questions like that.
I do. The poor man. He tries to love me. I may have my tiny faults.
God damn it, I'm gonna have a baby!
Sally is rather knowledgeable in these areas.
Does it really matter as long as you're having fun?
What good is sitting all alone in your room? Come, hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. Start by admitting from cradle to tomb, it isn't that long a stay. Life is a cabaret, old chum. It's only a cabaret, old chum. And I love a cabaret.
Welcome, bienvenue, welcome. Hello, everyone. It's Darren again. LGBT time. Woohoo! How are y'all? I can't hear you, but I'm hoping everything's okay with you guys. So we're going to be talking about one of my favorite Touchstone musicals ever, the Candor and Ebb Cabaret. And Candor and Ebb are two great Broadway men. You probably know their other famous work, which is Chicago. So they did not stray away from the social commentary at all in their movie musicals. But let's talk about Cabaret in specific. Cabaret is based on a book called The Berlin Stories by noted gay writer Christopher Isherwood. And Isherwood had traveled to Berlin to meet with his friend W.H. Auden. And he spent some time in the seamy bohemian underbelly of Berlin, but then had to leave because the politics had taken a turn for the not so great, as we will see in our discussion of Cabaret. I know the mics are here. Are y'all talking tonight? Okay. They're way quieter than normal.
I've been listening. I've been in awe of you, Darren, with all the knowledge on this.
The awe?
we're just letting you go, man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The all. Hey, so I think, if I'm not mistaken, Darren, I think
I've discovered that you must have some sort of ties to the FX channel or maybe getting paid for them or something because I think it was like last year, the year before we covered, you know where I'm going with this, right? You covered, whatever happened to Baby Jane.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And then FX came out with a series.
It was like huge.
Right after we did the show.
I know. Wasn't it amazing timing?
And now here we are covering Cabaret. And guess what? FX has a series about Bob Fosse coming out.
Oh, Bob Fosse. Fosse. Yes.
So
great choreographer, great director.
I see what you're doing.
You know, this broadcast is sponsored by no one. Okay. don't you know?
But I will say, so my history with Cabaret is probably, I think it just started like 2 days ago. When I watched the movie.
No, that's completely fair.
It's one that I've heard of. Obviously, I've heard of the movie. More so the movie than the play. And I know the movie is based on the play, but it was one of those that I was always curious about, but I just never just had, you know, it was one of those things that just never came up. And, obviously with the performers, Joel Grey and Liza, like this is, I don't know if that was the thing that put them on the map, but certainly it was the movie that kind of sealed them as like major
stars. As stars, yeah, I would say that. Liza with a Z, obviously.
Yes.
She, all roads on the LGBTQ show. Go back to Garland at some point or another. And here we are again.
They're yellow brick roads, are they?
They are. They are yellow brick roads.
That's so true.
There. And then Joel Grey, his family had been in show business in the vaudeville days. He grew up in theater.
Everything. I've seen him in other things, and I've seen Liza in other things, but I've never, seen him in this. And of course,
he is the father of Jennifer Grey from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
That's right.
And Dirty Dancing.
And Dirty Dancing. And
married to Agent Coulson.
Yes. But Joel Grey actually came out later in life. So not only was he Jewish, or is Jewish, he's also gay.
Mm. So this movie definitely has a lot of like...
There's a lot of...
subtext.
You know. So. It does not spoon feed you. And when it does, it's usually with a kick to the throat.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not subtle at all.
No, it's not.
It is amazing.
There's nothing subtle about this movie.
I mean, it's directed by Bob Fosse. Bob Fosse is not subtle. I know that enough about him. So,
but they have enough tricks in the movie to make you go, "Oh, this is a nice musical. That's a great number. Oh my god!"
So earlier this year, I saw for the first time. Speaking of Judy Garland, I saw for the first time the new version of A Star Is Born. I had never seen any of the previous versions before. So,
yeah, because it's like number four or five.
Exactly. It was the fourth one. And so I had in my head what I thought the story was. And it turns out when I saw the movie, I was like, whoa, this is not what I thought the story was going to be at all. Similarly, with Cabaret, I had in my head kind of thought I knew what it was going to be about. Mm-hmm. And I even like thought that, you know, the classic image of Liza in the garters and the black sleek dress and all that with the short hair. Like I thought for sure, like that's what she's wearing when she's singing the title track. Not close at all. Like, I didn't even get that right. I was like, wow, I am totally, this is like a really new experience for me.
I had seen it originally probably 30 years ago and on HBO, and Joel, I remember because I was younger, Joel Grey's character scared the hell out of me.
Oh, the MC. We'll get to him. We're gonna get to him, because you have to look at that and go, really? What were they doing here?
Exactly. But it was also, for me, it was interesting because you got to see fascism take over a country. Mm-hmm. And it was a country recovering. Inch by inch. Exactly. It was a country recovering from the First World War. And, you know, how Nazism and fascism slowly worked its way into society. And, you know, at the beginning of it, the Nazis were getting beat up on and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And by the end of it, the Nazis were in charge pretty much.
We're doing the beating.
Exactly. And it was just amazing. And this movie captures it very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you go through the musical numbers. Instead of like the big musical numbers of the 60s, like West Side Story, you know, Oliver, these were Academy Award winning musicals. No one believes anymore that you're just walking down the street singing. So it, that whole fantasy realm of musical kind of had to be thrown out of the window for this musical. And in the real musical, there's a lot of songs between the characters that they just threw out. And they only did the songs that are in the cabaret setting.
Okay.
Right. They didn't.
Except for the one out in the beer garden.
Yeah, yeah.
Except for that one. And you notice they went out to the country for that one.
Creepy.
The rural areas. Everything else is set on that stage in the cabaret. So you don't have the three characters walking down the street singing about how lovely Berlin is or anything like that. In order to like kind of set the scene, you have to go into like, okay, so 1930s Germany, it's recovering from World War I. It's bruised and battered, but there's still, and we're still in the 1930s before the crash in America, the economic Great Depression. So people are still being crazy. They're being rather decadent about stuff. And so the Kit Kat Club, all with three Ks, Kit Kat Club, I find that amusing for some reason.
Coincidence?
I think not.
I don't think anything in this movie is a coincidence.
No, it's not. This is one of these movies where you watch it more and more, you're going to discover more and more about it. Or you're going to go, oh, I see what you did there. When we get the MC who enters in, it's Joel Grey, and he's very taut in a tuxedo, rouged cheeks, fake eyelashes that are obviously fake. They're not pretending. These are straight across his eye, and they cut off part of them. Then they do the big cabaret song, Welcome In, which is the welcome to the club. Come on in. Have a seat. Yada, yada, yada. Come into the story now is what it says to the audience. And then we start getting the songs from the other characters, and we get Sally Bowles' Mine Hair. So let's talk about Sally for just a hot second. She's a messed up girl, that Sally Bowles.
You think?
She is almost like a physical version of Tinkerbell. Flighty. Very, oh, what's the next thing I'm going to do? I don't know, but I'll think of it. She's clearly hungry for money, hungry for success, hungry for love. And then she sings Mine Hair.
I also don't think it's a coincidence in this that, you know, even though it takes place in Germany, in Berlin, mm-hmm. the main two people that we are watching, one is American, very American, mm-hmm. and the other is English, very English. You know, very much a commentary on, and obviously this was made well after the fact. So there's a lot of like hindsight in this, like you know, what's going to happen.
We know what's coming down the road.
Yeah. It's pretty clear very early on, like, okay, everybody knows what's going to happen. And it's just, so it's like, it's got this dark cloud over it from the minute it starts, which is cool. I mean, it adds to the atmosphere. I did think it was very interesting, but I want to talk about, Liza, of course,
and we could spend
an hour talking about her, but, okay. So this is, my understanding is this is her first singing, like movie, like the movie where she like comes out and sings.
This is her first big movie. And on top of it, she won the Best Academy Award.
Yes, yes.
For Best Actress.
Yeah, I think this
has... Liza is an EGOT.
I think this has the most Oscars earned by a film not to win Best Picture.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, well, they were in competition with The Godfather.
Yeah, well... But
Joel Grey won Best Supporting Actor over at Robert De Niro for Godfather.
Liza is
think about that for a second.
So captivating in this movie. Mm-hmm. She, you can't take her eyes off her ever. She steals every scene that she's in.
Well, she has those huge saucer eyes.
She does.
You know, and, that just
and I do wonder,
compel you.
Both singing and performance-wise, I do wonder how much she was consciously or unconsciously channeling her mother. Like how much?
Well,
how
I don't
much,
think she can help it.
How, I was going to say, do you think it's just like the times where you're like, oh, well, that I can really see, you know, Judy Garland in her there. Do you think that's accidental? Or
well, luckily they don't look terribly a lot alike, right?
Right.
So Liza got her father's genes for the most part, except for the singing talent, which she got from her mother, clearly.
Yeah, her voice.
Yeah, her voice is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think here you have to rely on Bob Fosse being the director choreographer to be able to, and from everything I read, Bob Fosse choreographed even the eye movements on the dancers.
I can
really,
I could see that.
He choreographed. I don't think Liza brought any of Judy in accidentally. I think this was what Bob was doing.
Yeah.
So if you're reading Judy in there, that may just be because she's her daughter.
Because yeah, okay.
As opposed to what Bob was doing.
Or I think maybe Bob at sometimes was like, let's let a little Judy in here, like just to seal it. Because I mean, obviously that's some pretty powerful parentage to have. Yeah, you're right. She's not a clone. It's not like, oh, this would have been like, although I could definitely see, you know, if this was done earlier or whatever, I could definitely see like even
if she was younger and they gave her pigtails or something, maybe.
Like, I don't think that this is a role that Judy would have been like, ooh, I won't do this. I mean, I would imagine that Judy would have loved to have played this part.
Probably. But she would have been too old at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
very much so. But it's also so sophisticated of a role, too.
Mm-hmm. It's very, instead of the man pursuing the girl is pursuing all the men.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, very much so.
Sally's going after all these men.
Yes.
Everywhere. And, which is why the Mein Herr song is kind of subconsciously how she's talking about how she's going to go through Europe one man at a time. And the dancers are doing their steps by having their bellies on top of the top of the chair. And you hear them marching in unison at the climax of Mein Herr. It's like, oh, I see what you did there, Fosse. Mm-hmm. I see what you did there.
Pretty sneaky. Again,
mile by mile.
Again, not subtle.
Not subtle. Not subtle at all. And so then we meet Brian, which is Michael York. And the funny anecdote here was Michael York said, well, my agent said they were looking for a Michael York type. And he said, well, why don't you call them up? I think I might qualify. And so he was basically playing Christopher Isherwood. So he had that one swath of hair kind of trying to come down over his one eye. That was kind of an Isherwood thing. He had that until he passed away in the 80s or 90s. I forget when, but yeah.
Now,
Michael York played basically the vanilla. We think he's vanilla Englishman. And then you find out later he's not that vanilla.
My understanding is that at least as far as the major parts, the only actor that was in the productions of the play was Joel Grey.
That's correct.
Okay. Liza was not in the Broadway production. She was not in, like, none of them were. And do we know?
Well, usually in the production, it's a British singer and American writer.
Oh, I didn't know that. So it's flipped.
Mm-hmm. Oh. It's flipped.
Because
could you imagine getting Liza to do a British accent for 5 seconds?
Well, no, but I mean, I just find it interesting because I think she seems like it seems like much more of a commentary on America and England this way. Do we know, as far as the Broadway productions, do we know who the actors that played those roles were, like that kind of like brought it to prominence?
Or I have the revival cast, not the original cast.
Gotcha.
Cabaret has been done 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, so I've
seen, you've got a hit.
I've seen various people like I understand at one point Judi Dench played Sally, which I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Melissa Hart played Sally. There's been a lot of folks coming and going through that.
It's one of those female roles that, hey, if I can sing, I can do that role. Is it up? Let's go see. Because usually what they'll do is they will, quote unquote, stunt cast, and they'll put names in the Brian and Sally roles and change them out every 6 months when they get bored.
I remember probably I was in my early 20s and Joel Grey came back and did the touring company of this movie, of the play.
Yeah, he did it in the mid-80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember because it was a chance to go see him at the Kennedy Center. It was just like, oh.
Yeah.
But I was a poor, starving college student at the time, so no way.
Yeah, no way.
I think in one of the later revivals, it was Alan Cumming who played that role.
Oh, yeah. Alan Cumming put his own spin on it.
I was going to say, that must have been really interesting as well.
Well, the MC, everyone has questions about what's up with the MC. People view him as, oh, he just is the master of ceremonies in this club. There's nothing deeper than that. I tend to argue the point, no, there's something deeper than this, because he appears to be fairly omniscient about what's going on with the characters in the movie and in the play.
Yeah.
He always shows up when things have gone awry, and then he will sing something. Now, that's the structure of the play. It's also the structure of the movie. They did a lot of cross-cutting in the movie where there'll be something going on, and the MC will be on stage singing a song or doing a routine or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty apparent to me that he's the MC of the movie as well as the club. Like, this is the guy who's taking he's telling this story in the movie.
But he's not narrating in a way.
No. But he's
commenting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's bringing it to us and adding his own, you know, like little shots here and there of what's mm-hmm. going on. A little commentary. That's what I, you know, and obviously he, with the movie, he has this sort of more ominous, omniscient, omnipotent.
Yeah. Omniscient.
One of those omni words.
Omniscient viewpoints.
Like, he just seems like he's definitely like he's not, you know, not just human. He's like this.
Yeah.
This,
when they do the slap dance on stage and the guy's getting beaten out up outside.
Right. Right. Like because he's placing these numbers and he's performing these numbers at times where it's, and he knows what's going on. Like, he knows what's going on outside the club. Mm-hmm. We never see him outside the club, but he knows what's going on outside the club. And
very aware.
Do you get the sense, and I don't want to skip to the end here, but since we're talking about the MC, I kind of get the sense that he knows that at the end of the movie, it's not just the end of the movie. He's like, nope, this place is shutting down.
Yeah, it's the end of the world.
It's the end of my world. It's the end of
this. And they actually...
It's the end of the cab... Like, life is a cabaret. This is the end of the cabaret.
They say that. And we can, like, fast forward through the plot to get there. Because a lot of stuff happens already in this plot. I know, right? The British gentleman starts teaching German people to speak English for money in Fräulein Schmidt's flop house, and you see Fräulein Schmidt and Fräulein Kost in the play. Fräulein Schmidt has an affair with a gentleman named Hans, and she's German and he's Jewish, and Fräulein Kost is the local prostitute, and she turns into being a Nazi sympathizer, and while Fräulein Schneider and Herr Schultz were going to get married, they persuade Fräulein Schneider not to, because if she marries a Jew, she'll be considered a Jew. So instead of, in the movie, a wedding actually happens, in the play, a wedding does not occur.
Oh, wow.
Because those two students are not in the play.
Oh, really? They're not in the play?
That whole thing is not in the play.
Wow.
Not in the most recent version of it on stage now.
Gotcha. Interesting.
They are not in it. And it'd been a while since I'd seen the actual, you know, movie. I was like, oh yeah, that's right. These two are here, but they're not in the stage play. Oh. So they kind of play out the whole, it's kind of the same thing, except in the movie they have a happy ending temporarily.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Clearly. That's not stated outright. You don't need it spoon fed to you.
No.
But you know, in the movie, there's definitely not a happy ending. Fräulein Schneider is unhappy, depressed. Herr Schultz moves out of the flop house to another place and presumably gets picked up at some point because they vandalize his store during the play. And then, of course, you have the whole threesome aspect relationship with Ernst and
Max.
Yeah, Sally and what's his name? Went out of my head. Brian. Yeah, the English guy.
Yes.
And turns out she's sleeping with him and he's sleeping with him. Well, you know, that's going to get him into trouble because homosexuality was also on the list of bad things not to do. But so, we discover early on that Brian is probably mostly gay, but then he winds up sleeping with Sally.
Yeah, because she even accuses him of being gay. It's like when they first start talking about their sexuality. And so later it's not that big of a shock when we find out that the two things that I thought of during this whole segment with Max, one was Indecent Proposal and the other was Rocky Horror Picture Show. Like
kind of. Yeah.
With Max in the Frank role.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. He was definitely playing two ends against each other, so to speak.
Yeah.
Although, and of course, then Sally yelling at him about his infidelity was just hilarious. It's like, really?
I think
really
that part of the movie, which is probably what the play is all about, but that part of the movie kind of that I don't want to say it didn't work for me, but it wasn't as thrilling as I thought some of the rest of it was.
Well, you also have to remember the time.
I know. I get it.
You know, 1972.
Oh, sure. No, I get it.
Ooh, scandal to show a bisexual relationship, no matter how brief, on screen.
No, it was very, very taboo a little bit at that time.
Oh, yeah, totally. Because we've discussed...
well, they barely show it.
We've discussed the boys. They barely show it because that's all they could get away with.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no actual sex on stage or on film, but you definitely know things were going on. There were enough looks and enough pauses to give you that. Oh, here it is. Got it.
Oh, look at the song, the Ménage à Trois song.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the two ladies.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's right there.
Oh, yes.
It is right there. That's what's going on.
It's right in your face.
Mm-hmm. So we get to the end, and Sally winds up becoming pregnant. She doesn't know whose it is. Not a surprise. No. I don't even think she knew how she got pregnant or what the symptoms were since she went into a library. You know, it was like she was looking it up. I don't know what it means when I haven't had my period.
No. She went to the library to tell him. I don't think she was looking up. I think
she'd be looking for a dictionary. She doesn't seem that smart.
Well, that's probably true. But
she's talented, but honestly, not a smarty.
Yeah, she's not. She's very talented. She just in the play version, she gets an abortion without telling him, and sells her fur coat to pay for it. Same as in the movie. So that pretty much is consistent. And this is when the writer character has decided it's time to leave Berlin. I have to leave Berlin. You have to leave Berlin because of everything that's going on. And Sally just refuses. Sally wants her career above everything. And this is why I think it works better for Sally to be British than American, because why would an American go to Germany to sing in a cabaret act when Hollywood is in California?
Yeah,
when she talks about being a Hollywood star.
Yeah, that threw me a little bit. It was like the whole thing, oh, I want to be in movies. I want to be a starlet.
Why are you here?
Germany is not the place you want to be for that.
No.
Well,
I mean, they were doing some interesting things back then.
I was going to say, I mean, we aren't talking about the German film movement back then was pretty strong. But I will say, and I think they table that a little bit with all the stuff about her dad.
Yeah.
So,
which is not in the play.
Right. So it kind of makes sense from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. So that all that stuff happens, and then the writer leaves.
Yeah. The
writer leaves Berlin.
He has to go back to, you know, he was only supposed to be there temporarily anyway to get credit for
his visa's over. Yep. You know, so he heads back in the play. He gets some money wired to him
from the States to fly back home or get shipped back home, whatever he's going to do. And in this version, I think he just had enough money to get on a plane or the train to go back to London.
Yeah. In the movie, they don't really like,
they don't go into it much. Had the $150 each from Max.
Right. But
to pay for whatever.
But I mean, she blows through that because she needs to sell her coat for the abortion. So
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, they just kind of, all of a sudden they're at the station and he's getting on the train and I'm like,
Did we
decide that he was leaving? Like, it seemed really sudden in the movie.
It's really sudden in the movie. It's not that sudden in the play. It comes after he gets beaten up, obviously. Mm. He's like, yeah, the Nazis are going to win. It's time to leave
that would Berlin.
Yep. Time to leave Berlin. Let's go. And it's the funny thing, right? It's the gays. It's the immigrants. It's the Jewish people. These are the people who are going to be affected most by this. And they are at the most not paying attention to what's going on around them. Mm-mm. The world's falling down around their eyes and all they see is the Kit Kat Club. Meanwhile, you're driving by, oh, this guy got his head bashed in.
Well, the most telling was, you know, when one of the final scenes and the whole audience were all Nazis.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I kind of get the impression that the, you know, cause Joel kind of looks at the camera to say like, yeah, this is the end. This is the end. Like this is, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to perform.
Well, Sally sings that song, the cabaret song, which everyone, if they only hear, you know, life is a cabaret, they think, oh, this is a great song. It's fun. It's peppy.
Yeah, no.
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 That's another thing that threw me when she was performing it. I'm like, oh, wait. No. This doesn't mean what I thought.
The story about Elsie is right there. Sally commits suicide. Sally takes herself out.
Yeah, that's...
She says, quite frankly, I want to be, when I go, I'm going like Elsie.
Yep. Yeah.
Pills and liquor.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back to Garland in your head and you go, ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, that's.
It ties right back there. So.
That's, yep.
A lot of not so subtle subtext.
Not at all subtle subtext at all. In the play version, in the one that Alan Cumming did, and this was true to the production, I believe, that they did on stage where Joel Grey does his bow out and then just leaves. And in that production, they had a mirror aimed towards the audience. So you could see the people in the audience. So that's what that mirror ball effect is going on right there. In the new production that Alan Cumming was a part of, at the end, before he sings his song, the Kit Kat Club turns into a concentration camp.
Ugh.
And he takes off his jacket, and underneath is the black and white with the Jewish star and the pink triangle on it. And then he sings the three lines out, and then it's darkness. This is not a movie to make you feel good.
Oh, not at all.
This is not a movie that you're going to sit at home and go, oh, wasn't that a good time at the movie theaters?
I want to go see the play now.
I know, right? This is a tale warning us about being complacent when fascism rises.
Mm-hmm. And it's scary in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even the peppy songs are like have an edge to them. Like Money Makes the World Go Round is probably... Mm-hmm. The second most famous song in this, right? And and it's so biting and sharp in this movie that it's uncomfortable to watch. I mean, their performance is great, smooth. They're like, you know, I couldn't help but think of, you know, Judy at her height with some of the greats like Mickey Rooney and Fred Astaire and all that. But yet, and so yeah, Liza and Joel are wonderful performing that song together. But it's not comfortable.
No, it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal.
That's a good way to put it.
On purpose.
Yes.
Oh, of course.
Oh yeah.
Oh, there was nothing in this movie that was done just, you know, subtle or anything.
Subtle?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the whole song about if you could see her through my eyes. What a beautiful love song until the last five words. Or six words, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
and it's like, bam, right in the throat. You were enjoying a nice comical piece. It was amusing, ha 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 ha. And then right in the gut. This is a musical that matters in our world because of what our political climate is now. We're a little divisive, to say the least, I think, in the country. Just a bit divisive. We have people egging on the differences to make us more different than we actually are at the end of the day. At the end of the day, what matters is that we rise up and unite against those who would separate us and make us feel like the other is the cause of all of our problems.
Well, always taking blame and pointing fingers elsewhere where they should be looking at themselves.
Yep. Because we know what happens. None of these characters are going to survive. None of these characters
are going
to survive.
No, not at all.
You basically watched Hamlet without the last act. Because none of them make it out alive. I mean, Brian's going to go to England. That means next to nothing. There are bombings all over Europe and London. So who knows if he would have survived that at all.
He would probably get drafted, right?
Yeah, he probably would be drafted. Or be jailed for being gay. Because that was a thing. And when the Allies came to the concentration camps, they kept the gay people in them. Because being gay was an unacceptable crime to most of the Allies back then.
It still is to some of them.
Yep. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a feel-good piece, right?
Well, it's
but great performances.
It's dark, but it's so beautiful.
It's dark and necessary.
Yeah, I think so. And as you guys point out, I mean, it's unfortunately timely. And it's, you know, I mean, it's sexy. Like, can we say that too? I mean, look, I mean, Liza's cabaret outfit with the garters and everything is probably, it's so simple, but it's probably one of the sexiest outfits in the history of film.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's up there for sure.
Oh yeah. With the top hat and the hat and everything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The top hat and the slinky, you know, barely covered.
Each dress. One of these girls is a virgin. Not.
You don't believe me?
Mm-hmm.
You can check yourself. Check for yourself.
Check Helga. So yeah, it's not a movie you want to show little kids for sure.
No.
You definitely want to watch this when you're more acquainted with world history because you're not going to get it.
Yeah, I'm
otherwise
guessing. I didn't see a rating on this when I watched it, but I'm guessing it was R.
Originally, it was going to be X.
Yeah,
I could see that.
Because of the sex content, mm-hmm. and they had to cut some stuff.
Yep, exactly.
Well, it's never because of the violence.
No, it's never because of violence.
No, violence, that would be PG-13. Well, back then, PG.
Well, PG, yeah, PG back then. I think they had to warn people this is not a musical you take your kids to, because the only people doing musicals back then were the big pastiche movie musicals or Disney, and Disney less so. But, yeah. This was just a hard time for the movie musical because everything socially had blown up.
Music kids.
No.
No, it's not.
Although, also about Nazis. Interesting.
How about that?
Well, I think, like, yeah, I mean, with everything as dark as this movie is and everything that's happening, I think for me the scariest, you know, scene is the Hitler Youth scene. I mean, that's so creepy.
The one out at the beer garden.
Yep.
It's completely innocent. Yep.
Mm-hmm. When the one kid started singing and then everyone started joining in. And then I loved what, you know, Michael York said, still have them under control, do you?
Yeah. Just a question.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that guy went to Argentina, Max. I'm going to Argentina for a while.
I'm out.
Yep. Peace. Well, that's what happens, right? In war, people with money who can leave the area will.
Sure.
Of course.
Or they're leaving other people behind to deal with the aftermath.
Or they're not affected because they can buy their way out of stuff.
Yeah, well, there's that. Bone spurs. There's that.
Well, he finally made it to Vietnam. It's okay.
He did. Yes. He did.
So what would you say, personal feelings aside, what would you say is the impact mm-hmm. of the play and especially the movie on certainly pop culture as well as,
what we're talking about,
which is Keiko, right?
Well, the impact is we have fought long and hard for rights, and those rights have been born off the backs of people who didn't make it through the 80s and the 90s and the aughts due to a horrible disease that was ignored by the government for longer than it should have been due to no funding and animus to the community. We are facing large numbers of hate crime increases across the country right now, specifically against trans women and trans women of color. That's never a good sign. Hate groups have apparently gone up in numbers, according to the Southern Poverty Law folks who actually track hate organizations across the country. We have to be aware. We have to stay forever vigilant, and we have to remain aware of the fact that every day we have to fight for our rights to exist. Everything else is extra after that, but just to have the ability to exist is a freedom that we have in this country, and we have to hold on to it no matter what anyone would like to tell us. No matter what anyone says about other people coming here, quote unquote, to take your jobs, you're an American and you should act like it. And that means we treat each other with respect at the end of the day. And that's one of those things where I'm a fan of the tolerance paradox. Have you heard about this? Where in order to be tolerant, you have to be intolerant of those who are intolerant. In order to tolerate people, you must be able to say to someone who is intolerant, I don't tolerate you. Because if we tolerate the intolerant, pretty soon, the only people who will be tolerated are the ones that the intolerant agree with. So people may disagree with my opinions. People may disagree with other things. But when they cross the line, when they decide to say that my ability to exist as a human being should be up for debate.
Well, that's ridiculous.
But that's where this is.
Oh, I know. I know.
I know you know. I know you know.
No, so, exactly. And that kind of thinking mm-hmm. is so...
It's crazy.
It's crazy. No, it's outdated. It's backwards.
Totally it's outdated.
And
but we're also dealing with people who don't believe that this time of history actually existed.
There's proof that it does.
Yeah, I know. That we're dealing with people who think the earth is flat.
I know. Trust me, I know. I'm looking forward to that reality show where they try to find the edge of the earth.
No, thank you. No, thank you. We're dealing with people who think, vaccines are bad and we're having measles outbreaks. So, there's all kinds of things going on right now, and people need, and it's going on in different corners, in different areas. Cabaret is a call to action and a call to resist apathy.
I can see
that's what cabaret. That's why cabaret is important. It is a lesson to the audience to say, "Hey, wake up! Look at what's going on around you. What can you do about it? Do it."
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's going on. Or no, just sit in the Kit Kat Club. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
As the world crashes around your ears.
Uh-huh. In fact, Brian says that in the play. We were in the Kit Kat Club. There was a cabaret. There was an MC. And I was dancing with Sally Bowles, and the world was ending. There's your summary mm-hmm. for cabaret right there. Four sentences at the end of the play.
Exactly. The world is changing, and this is a good example of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Oh, always. What's the famous Chinese curse? May you live in interesting times.
Mm. Hey. I like nice calm times.
Indeed.
I don't
Indeed.
Know. If there's a sexy looks in as this, then give me the cabaret any day.
Yeah. Well, it's okay, because next time we're going to do something lighter. I promise, guys. I promise. We'll do something much lighter and fair. I'm going to go visit my favorite auntie.
I'm almost afraid.
Really? Really? Why are you afraid?
Oh, Darren, you take us on trips where we don't go often.
I know. I know.
And I love it.
But that's why we, you know, that's why we have you with us.
Well, thank you. Exactly. I appreciate bringing a little fabulousness. Sometimes I got to bring it real, you know, and this was, yeah, it's a musical, but it's a real musical when you apply it to the issues going on today. That's why it's important.
Well, exactly. And it's not supposed to make you feel warm and fuzzy. This gives you, you know, makes you want to squirm in your seat. There's reasons for that.
Yep. It certainly is. It's a very squirmy thing. And when you, especially that musical number about if you could see it through mine eyes, and you realize, oh, that's how easy you turn someone against a whole group of people. That song right there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wow. Just masterful work from Kander and Ebb. And we might do Chicago down the road. I haven't decided. There's not a lot of LGBT content in it. But certainly, hey, it's a musical, right? So maybe that qualifies it on its own.
I've seen that one.
But you've seen that one?
I've seen the movie. Yeah. I haven't seen the play.
Mm-hmm. I've done both.
You've done both?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
All those legs.
Yes.
All those legs everywhere. Of course you've seen it.
Well, very cool. Well, thank you for bringing this up. I think it's like I said, I think it's apt, and I think it's an important movie. So if people haven't seen it,
yeah, historically, it's a great movie.
I definitely recommend it. Really highest possible marks. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes you see some of these movies that have won all these Academy Awards, and you see them and you're like, well, that's not really, I mean, maybe for the time it was okay, but right now it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't mm-hmm. Live up to the reputation.
Well, it doesn't speak to what's going on right now.
Right. It's timeless. It's more like of its time, right? This seems more like maybe it's because of the atmosphere that Fosse creates in the movie, but it just seems like it's got a timeless quality to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it does.
You can definitely see where its influence is still out there. So
agreed.
Excellent. Well, thank you, sir.
You are welcome.
And yeah, I guess we'll be right back with the ESO Network comic book.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about the new chapter for the game Dead by Daylight that was just announced today. So for the last few weeks, the developers of the game Dead by Daylight have been hinting at a new chapter with a new survivor and a new killer for the game as well. For those not familiar with the game Dead by Daylight, it's an asymmetrical game where you have four survivors and one killer. The killer chases their survivors, trying to knock them down and hook them on a hook at least three times. And the survivors run around trying to fix generators. Once they fix five, they can open a door so they can escape. Now, this game has a lot of different characters, including many from horror movies like Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, the cannibal from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and then their own original characters like the Huntress, the Hillbilly, the Wraith, and stuff like that. So it's really, really cool. They also have survivor characters. Some of them are based off the movies, and some of them are original characters that they've made. Now, the new character, the new killer, is called the Plague. She looks like a mummy, and she just looks really, really cool. And she carries around an incense burner with her. And then we have a new female survivor named Jane Romero, who is a talk show host who ends up getting in a car accident and dying. And then the entity from the game that makes all of this happen takes her and puts her in this PvP survival game. So it'll be really, really interesting to see how these characters play out in the game, how they look, how their perks are, because some of them have really, really cool perks. And then also the changes that are coming to the game where the generators, well, you can only work on certain ones at the beginning, and then the other ones are unlocked as you proceed, so the killer can actually, catch you faster. So it's going to be really interesting to see how all that works as well. I have really been enjoying playing this game, and if you like PvP games that are horror-themed, then you should totally check this out. It's available for PC and consoles, and it's really fun, but also super intense. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
For the week of March 5th, 2019, it's the ESO Network Con Report.
In the month of March, you can find ESO Network folks all over the Southeast, starting this Friday, March 8th, at Daredevils of Wrestling. That's KFW Presents Daredevils of Wrestling. That is at the RV Resort Conference Center in Sevierville. I think it's Sevierville, Tennessee. You can find the PWR host himself, Richard. He will be there doing a live pre-show podcast. So arrive early and you can be on an episode of PWR with Richard. You can look that up in KFW Events on Facebook, or you can get in touch with him directly. We will have links in the show notes for both of those. So that is on Friday. Saturday and Sunday in Greenville, South Carolina, it is the SC Comic Con. And, Mike, this is actually one of our favorite conventions to do. We love everybody there associated with it on behind the scenes as well as attending. A lot of friends of the station are going to be there. And we've got a presence there. We not only are we going to have tables, we'll have an ESO Network table. That is table number 525. And Tiki Zombie, myself, and artist Peter Cutler will be in artist 524, so across the aisle from each other. We'll be staring at each other. It's going to be awkward.
We'll be throwing things. It'll be good.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so yeah, that's true. We'll be throwing things. But we'll also be handling some panel duties on both Saturday and Sunday. And, Mike, I'm so excited about all the panels that we'll be doing, the three panels that we'll be doing starting on Saturday at noon.
That's right. We're going to be interviewing wrestling legend, not just any wrestler, wrestling legend Mick Foley.
He is a Hall of Famer.
Yes, he is.
A New York Times selling best author.
That's right. And it's going to be awesome. We are going to be doing that 12 noon on Saturday. And then on Saturday, we are going to be doing a So You Want a Podcast panel. And we have some friends going to be joining us. So it'll be Mike and I and a couple other folks. And we will be in room B of the panel rooms. And we'll be talking all about podcasting. And then get this, Sunday at 2:30 p.m., we are going to be talking to Kevin Eastman, one of the creators of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's a great, fantastic number of panels that we're going to be participating in. We have a wrestling Hall of Famer on Saturday and a comic book Hall of Famer on Sunday. And in the middle, we get to talk about things that we love, like podcasting. And the other rest of the times we'll be at our tables, and we will be, we would love to talk to everybody who's attending. So come find us. Again, we will be at tables 524 and 525.
Mike, you'll be at your table. I'll be looking for pop figures.
That's true. He will. Yeah. If you're probably better off, if you want to find Mike Faber to go where the pop figures are, that's where Faber will be. I will be at my table, and yes, it's going to be a great time. We're going to have a blast. So check us out. If you are anywhere near the Greenville area this weekend, come and find us. It's going to be a blast. And then sort of towards the end of March, March 22nd through the 25th, is a brand new show in East Ridge, Tennessee. It is Matrotham Con, and I will be there. I will be there with Peter Cutler, and we will be representing Tiki Zombie up there. Of course, I'll also be representing Earth Station One, and it's going to be a blast to be representing both at this new convention. Also, our good friends Ricky and Bambi will be in attendance. They will be performing as Radio Cult on Saturday night. I believe it's Saturday night. It's Friday, Saturday night. They're going to be there as well. So you know it's going to be a good time if Radio Cult's in the house. There's going to be music, good music to listen to. So and plenty of other guests too. So we'll have links to all of that in the show notes so you can check it out. But that's where you can find ESO Network folks in the month of March. If you've got a show that you want us to help participate in, do panels, look at our resume. It's impressive. Please reach out to us because we love talking about conventions.
So let's go wrap up another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Darren, thank you for bringing this topic
out. You are more than welcome.
It was awesome. It was great going back to the cabaret, oh chum.
It's fun. It's a fun place to be.
To a point.
Right.
To a point.
The audience was getting a little fascist for me. But that's
okay. A very pointed
nice
point.
Nice place to visit, but I'm not sure I'd want to live there.
Oh, sure. Come on.
In fact, I'm positive I wouldn't want to live
there. Yeah, most of us wouldn't want to live there. We should remember that daily.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Not really. Everything's just same old, same old. Although I think I've committed to a cosplay for Dragon Con, but I was saving that for the Dragon Con show. So
okay, well, that's going to be coming to you in a few weeks, so we'll wait till then.
Yeah, ooh, a teaser.
Spoiler. He's teasing the Dragon Con report.
So is things heating up with the Legion stuff?
Bendis keeps sending out Twitter teases. And I refer to it as, oh, look, DC's tickling my testicles again. Doomsday Clock number 9 is supposed to be out again this week. It was supposed to be out last week and the week before that and the week before that. It keeps getting delayed. No one knows why. And it's the one with the Legion ring on the cover. So we don't know what's going on. We have no clue. And I'm at the point where I'm like, DC doesn't know what's going on. I haven't read Doomsday Clock at all. I will, depending upon what happens with issue 9, I will pick it up on Comixology and read through it. But I'm not going to pick it up for one panel of a Legionnaire
A
32-page book for $5.99. And I'm really sick of DC doing that. It's like, oh my god, a Legion appearance! One panel, one person. No.
Yeah, they did that to me with the Justice Society crap. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm like, no. I've had it with the breadcrumbs. Get a real book together. And call me when you do. Until then, I've been on my personal little boycott, which I'm sure DC doesn't care about, but still.
You know, DC.
Well, it's like I would like a book with my favorite characters in it. That's all I'm asking for.
Of course.
You know, I'm not one of those guys who buys 80 issues of Batman a month. Sorry.
Sorry, Mikey.
Well, I mean, Batman's a great character, but enough's enough. Show some variety, please. Yes, I know we have Batwoman, and we have Batgirl, and we have Robin, and we have Nightwing, and we have Red Hood. That's most of their line right now.
There's their own Bat Legion, really.
Yeah, Bat Legion, Bat Cow. all the Robins can throw a rock and hit a Robin these days. So
the Batman that laughs, the Batman that cries, the Batman,
the Batman that emotes constantly.
Exactly.
You know,
I can see them.
Whatever. And then people get upset. You're not reading the other books because the other books aren't good. Put some good books out and we'll read them. I promise you. Word will get out, but you've got to have a creative team to commit to a book, not just 6 issues and then they're out.
Nope. I agree.
You got me to rant. Damn it, Faber. Got me to rant.
Yes, my job is done.
This is shout outs, not Rand and Raves.
I know, it's the wrong segment. And here I am monologuing. I'm done.
Okay.
Hold on, one more thing. Hold on. If you think I'm going to Star Wars Land, even as a Disney freak, until 2021, 2022, maybe 2023, you're freaking insane. Done.
Yeah, you thought the lines were bad for when Harry Potter was started at Universal.
Oh my god, the lines are going to start at the state line.
Exactly.
I think they're going to start here.
Exactly. Possibly.
They'll be starting at Dragon Con.
Probably.
I better get out my end of the line.
Ooh, ooh, there's another cosplay. Line starts here for Galaxy's Edge. Line starts here for Galaxy's Edge. Just walk around with that. Line starts here for Galaxy's Edge.
That's hilarious.
That might actually be my Thursday night I'm too drunk to get dressed up costume.
You'll probably, that'll probably win the weekend.
Probably. Yep. All awesome. Right.
And Mr. Mike, thank you, my friend.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about, sir?
Absolutely. Speaking of comics, I want to give a shout out to our good friend Rob Jones, who is working on the second issue of High Spot, which is the story of Kate Carter, who is a stunt double slash adventurer. And this is the second issue. It just started up on Kickstarter. So people can check it out, and if they like the first issue, and even if they miss the first issue, there's plenty of opportunities in this Kickstarter to get both issues 1 and 2, either digitally or print edition. So it's good stuff by a good guy. So I definitely recommend checking it out.
That is awesome. My shout out goes out to... Actually, it's going to be a little bit of a sad thing because, you know, I think all of us were a little shocked by the passing of Luke Perry.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just talked about Luke about 2-3 weeks ago when we did the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer review. And it was just flooring. He's our age, early 50s. And, you know, to have a stroke and then to pass away from it is just amazing. It's heartbreaking to think about, and you know, that's why I'm gonna tell all our friends out there, no matter what age you're at, take care of yourselves. You know, go to the doctor if you confer your regular physicals. You know, check out, you know, if you have a family history of illness, be aware of it and don't take it lightly, because you know, you never know when the last time you see somebody, it will be the last time you could talk to them and say, I love you, or, hey, thanks for being my friend, or whatever. You know, it's just, you know, just don't take things for granted. And, you know, it kind of opened my eyes for some things, and it's just, it's crazy. And, you know, just take care of yourselves. And, you know, it just shows you how short life is and how much life likes throwing a little curveball at you.
It's true.
So, you know, we all have to take that into account. Sorry to bring everything down like that, but, you know, it's just reality kind of hits you across the face like that sometimes. So,
mm-hmm. Don't worry. So, life is a cabaret.
Yeah, you can just watch Cabaret. It'll make you feel much better.
Old chum.
Yes, exactly. Watch Cabaret. It's a big pick-me-up. Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm. So, Not really.
But speaking of pick-me-ups, we'll be back again next week, and we are doing a movie review, and we are...
Shocker! Are we reviewing a movie that starts with C again?
Exactly, another C movie.
Hmm. All about the C movies, baby.
Exactly. So we were talking about Shazam. No.
The silent C.
Exactly.
Marvel.
Shazam.
See, it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. All right.
I want to go see Captain Marvel and then go see Captain Marvel.
Exactly.
Double feature.
Two Captain Marvel movies. It's awesome. So, yeah, we are going to see the Marvel version of Captain Marvel. It should be a lot of fun, and got a lot of fun people lined up to talk all about it. So it should be really interesting to see what we got going on. But, you know, we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com and let us know what's going on. We will talk to you all real soon and hope you guys have a great week. And don't forget to come see us at South Carolina Comic Con this weekend. Take it easy. Peace. And we're done.
Woohoo!
Boom.
All right, gentlemen.
You've been listening to the Earth Station 1 podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Earth Station 1 is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.